But the guy hit me really fucking hard.
Yes, he did. But somebody blinded him. Fuck you, Musty. Really good
Musty's move. Time to shine.
Had big plans for that guy.
What were the plans? Being completely blind for like seven rounds and then dying? Because then I've got good news.
Oh, no, they weren't. That's okay.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigal.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. This week we're taking a look at the Artificer Fighter Multiclass, Trolls, and then another segment of Ask Monsters Multiclass. So pull up a chair and stick around for a while.
This week our multiclass is the Fighter and the Artificer. So Fighter is your standard melee combatant, but they are the absolute best at it. Their main thing is that they're just going to keep getting better and better at fighting. Depending on which subclass you go on, there might be some fun twists to it, but that is as basic as it gets. The multi-class requirements to go in or out of this class is 13 in strength or 13 in dex. The other one is the Artificer. So this is your half caster that really has a focus on weaving the arcane into technology. Their main thing is they get infusions that allow them to buff certain weapons or armor or create magic items. And they're smart. 13 intelligence to multiclass in or out of. So first thoughts, take it away, Will.
I don't know. That sounds pretty good, right?
I don't know why I ever go to you for these. It's honestly, at this point, my bad.
There's that action search thing. I think that's pretty good for everybody.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it goes with fighter multi-classes, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, well, the first three levels are good for literally anyone who exists. Or at least the first two. You get your second wind, you get action surge.
And a fighting style.
And I don't think there's any single character that wouldn't benefit from those.
And the other issue is the Artificer has a lot of... There's like a lot of stuff like, oh, I want a magic X. And like a fighter could want a magic whatever the fuck they wanted for whatever right. character concept they wanted. And that would be a really good way to get it. So I don't know. It seems like a good idea. I like the combination. I think as far as the int combination with either dex or strength, it makes more sense than a wizard, that's for sure. And I think that martial combinations will work pretty well with the Artificer.
Yeah. Kevin, first thoughts?
Yeah, this is one where, I mean, almost immediately just could tell it's good to start going through. And it's like, yep, it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
Million ways to go about it. It just depends how you want to craft it. Obviously, there's probably some classes that aren't working that well together. But even just like the base stuff you get out of being a fighter is just, it's just great for this. Battlesmith's probably getting the most because they're melee, where the other two... Artillerist and Alchemist are more focused on spellcasting damage, but even still, they can get a lot of benefit out of the fighter stuff.
Yeah, and I think when I hear the requirements of this, of 13 strength or dex and intelligence, the first thing that I'm going to is there any benefit to going Eldritch Knight? Because that's a subclass that heavily relies on intelligence, but a lot of times it can feel kind of difficult to balance raising your intelligence and your strength. But if you go Battlesmith, that gives you the ability to use your melee attacks with your intelligence modifiers, removing that strength requirement almost. So this can become a very single attribute dependent or a sad class, which is a happy thing.
Right. So I just don't know if you get much for that extra level. You get spellcasting,
mm-hmm.
which the Artificer is already going to get. It's not going to boost your level because it's, you know, you have one level in the spellcasting as a third caster and won't add to that multi-class total level spellcasting. And it's the wizard spell list, which I'm pretty sure is really similar to the Artificer spell list anyways. You also get weapon bond, which is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I guess where you can bond to a weapon and zap it to your hand. Which comes up, but...
I think later levels it becomes a little bit more worthwhile. Around 7th level, when you can cast a cantrip and make a weapon attack.
Yeah, I was going to say, 7th level is when it gets good, because, yeah, cast a cantrip and then make one weapon attack as a bonus action. And that could be artificer cantrips or whatever, and so you could Well, see, I was going to say, like, the Artillerist or the Alchemist get bonuses to that cantrip mm-hmm. damage, and that'd be great, but then they're not getting the intelligence thing that Battlesmiths get.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still say that a three-level dip into Artificer so that you could use Intelligence as your modifier instead of Strength would make it probably worth it.
Mainly being an Eldritch Knight?
Yeah.
I was doing it the other way around.
Yeah, so mainly Eldritch Knight with a three-level dip into Artificer. Now you only have to worry about Intelligence. You now have extra
spell levels.
And you're less limited in what you take as an Eldritch Knight. The biggest suggestion when going Eldritch Knight is go for spells that don't worry about a save DC. This makes it so you can actually consider those, and it actually changes up the Eldritch Knight playstyle considerably.
Right. Yeah, and for, three-level dip to Battlesmith, that you're going to get Infusions,
mm-hmm.
which are always nice.
Right.
A couple Artificer spell level, and then, with Battlesmith, they'll get, the Tool Proficiency.
Steel Defender is the big
one. Yeah, yeah, Steel Defender, and then the where you could use Intelligence.
Right.
As well.
I mean, usually for other classes, the big thing about going Battlesmith is that you get, like, martial proficiencies, you get heavy armor. You're going to get all of that from being a fighter anyways. Really, the main thing is the Steel Defender, Infusions, and the Intelligence as your modifier.
Right.
Which, I mean, again, for a three-level dip, I don't know. I mean, that's at least something. Allowing you to be a single attribute class is probably worth it to some extent.
Right.
It might be a little hard, but it's still a different character concept as well, which is cool.
Right. You'll probably want strength up there to make use of armor.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, at least needs to be 13 or dex 13.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, though, you can also go like dwarf and get the thing where you're not the strength reduction. Mm-hmm. The speed reduction from lack of strength doesn't matter.
But it shouldn't be hard to get 15 strength. If you've got 15 strength, which is the minimum you need for heavy armor, and then you go all into intelligence, that's it. You're ready to go, basically.
Right. But I say dex, though, is always pretty useful.
Yeah.
That's fair. Dex would be competing with that one.
Yeah, so just dump strength, go dwarf, but still get the heavy armor proficiency, and then you're focused on intelligence.
And but then you're a dexterous dwarf, and I don't like that. It doesn't seem fitting. I don't like it.
You can get your boots of springing and striding at level 10 for an artificer.
There you go, which is pretty far along to wait for heavy armor, but...
It's more of a as an artificer kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's actually really useful.
What's that?
Those boots for, like, just an artificer.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't want to go strength if you were just an artificer.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah, it would probably be, like, just ignore it, and then now you get a pretty big boost at level 10. Can get your heavy armor on.
Hell yeah.
The only thing that I really don't love about this class is the flavor is almost a little too easy to mix. We've talked about going fighter. Fighter is generally something that's pretty straightforward. You were a trained soldier or literally anything that has fighting in it, and you can just justify it. Arena fighter. Sure, great. You're a fighter. Fine. Artificer is one that's really easy to pick up for any class to say that you want to start getting into this arcane technology. It changes your character, it changes the flavor of it, but overall it's not like a huge defining moment. It's just a hobby that you've picked up. And it kind of feels that way on both sides, where the flavor together, I don't think it adds too much. And maybe I'm being too narrow. Is there anything that you guys really thought of that, like, these two just, like, add to each other because of it?
Flavor-wise?
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, but at the same time, then, it does give you a lot of open, like, a lot of leeway to do what you want with your character and backstory. You're not totally trying to figure out, all right, why are they a cleric or whatever. It's just, they have their abilities. They're good at fighting because of, they were a mercenary. They were an arena fighter. They were a guard. They were a soldier. They got attacked as a kid and picked up a club, and now they're a folk hero. Whatever.
Right.
A million reasons why they're good at fighting.
Totally.
And then same with, why do they tinker stuff? They're smart and interested in it. I mean, it does completely opens up to whatever you want the character to be.
Right, and I think there's plenty of potential for a mentor-type character who either taught them the fighting, taught them the technology, whatever it might be. I don't think that this has to be a boring character by any means, or that they're, like, pigeonholed into one specific thing that, ruins it.
Right.
I think my only issue is just that we do a lot of multi-classes where I feel like it's like, oh, these are difficult to put together, but once you find something, it's like, wow, this adds a lot of flavor. I don't think that going into Artificer or going into Fighter is going to like really add that much flavor. So you're going to just be heavily relying on other backstory stuff. Totally fine. Totally fine.
You've even... the obvious thing to me in all Artificers is their access to magic items is something that is unique in any world that they are in. And I can see that being very tempting. Hell, even in the flavorful backstory for fighters in the book, it mentions, like, why would someone become a fighter if they were a guard? Guards aren't fighters.
Right.
It's like, because a guard can never get a flame tongue sword, which is badass.
Right.
I can see people being like, oh, I'm a regular guard, but you know what's badass? Magic items. That's a pursuit, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I think Artificer, like, anybody could be one with that goal in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's perfectly fair. I mean, the pursuit of the knowledge of the cool items even, I mean, that's perfectly fine as well. And depending on which of the Artificer subclasses you go into, maybe you are a fighter who specifically really likes potions. I mean, that makes you your character who it is. I just don't think it's that interesting of an addition.
Right. Or you're a cavalier fighter who's a gnome or halfling who decides, you know what? These horses and other crap I ride are just too squishy and not reliable enough. I'm going to build my mounts and go battlesmith. And
okay.
You could ride your steel defender into battle.
There we go. I like that. I like that a lot.
I don't think it's mechanically all that beneficial, but it's neat.
Who cares if it's mechanically beneficial?
I mean, cavaliers do get a very small boost of mounted. Being mounted.
Right.
Yeah, what advantage on not being knocked off, and it's only 5 feet to mount or dismount their mount.
Right. Cool. I mean, yeah. That's something. I like it.
Yeah.
I like the Cavalier subclass a ton.
Mm-hmm.
They have that unwavering mark. I think that's really nice, where basically only they put a mark on somebody and that enemy can only attack them. If they attack anyone else, they get disadvantage. And if they do still attack them and hit, then you get an additional attack next time you attack that person, that enemy.
Something like that.
Yeah. No, it's exactly like that.
Yeah. Yeah, like he said, something like that.
I was thinking of the Arcane Archer. Arcane Archer as a whole is not that amazing of a subclass for fighter. I think it's kind of on the weaker side.
You can do it like once, twice a week.
No, it's twice per short rest you get your Arcane Archer thing. The twice issue for me is that it doesn't
just twice.
God damn it.
once you take this class, you can do it twice. And then never again. No, you can't reclass.
So generally it's the issue of it is that it doesn't scale very well. All of its things go up at level 18, like all of the damage and all of those things. Also, it relies on intelligence to set a DC.
Yeah.
So anytime we talk about multiclassing, it's like, okay, do you want to throw in another thing you have to focus on? Well, with this, at least, you can focus purely on intelligence. If you go that battlesmith, once again, you're using intelligence for your bow. And I know we talk a lot about just saying, well, crossbow makes sense. So just, you know, it says longbow, just throw that out and do a crossbow. In this case, I think it would actually be really cool for an artificer to use like a compact bow, where they're using like a really like
a compound bow.
Compound. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I didn't Google it beforehand because I'm stupid and just like to talk.
I grew up in the suburbs.
Sorry, a compound bow. Okay. So they just have like a really dope bow that they then like are basically making. You can reflavor the arrows that they choose to use as, you know, technology. They are, or magic, whatever, you know, infusing the arrowhead with something. Maybe it's something that opens up and vines wrap around, which is one of these, or
right.
The banishing one might make a little less sense, but there are just different options you can take there where you now take Arcane Archer and you say, okay, it's arcane, but it's also technology arcane. And that I think is a really cool reflavor. And because you really only need to go three into Arcane Archer to get those, like two of them, two times per short rest. And then you just go battlesmith at level 5, you get your extra attack and you just keep on going that direction. That's actually a pretty good combination there.
Yeah.
Does it still do a D8?
A D8 of what?
damage?
It depends on which of the...
No, I'm talking about the bow, man.
Oh, the bow? I mean,
that was the idea, right?
Is a longbow D8?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, that wouldn't stop.
No, I'm on board. And I will say that the only two that don't actually work with your, like, tech definition, which isn't necessary, are the first two, which is banishing and beguiling.
Correct.
The rest of them are like, yeah, no, that'd be totally a dope thing that you would make an arrow for.
Right. So there's the...
With banishing, there's somebody sent in our chat wants that kind of idea where you have like a portable hole rolled up.
Oh,
and
right.
An arrow tip. I forgot the specifics. And when it shot, it pushed it into like a bag of holding.
The tiny bag of holding portable hole. That is a sphere of annihilation, not banishment.
Yeah. So you kind of in that vein.
Right. Where you basically have a portable hole that comes out when it...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You could do something if you wanted to. I think it makes less sense than something like a grasping arrow, which, you know, shoots out poisonous brambles that wrap around the target and they take damage and their speed's reduced. That just, like, that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. And then, like, beguiling, that would actually fit really well with Alchemist because they put some sort of powder in there. When it hits it, it puffs up and...
Oh, it charms and they do psychic damage?
Yeah.
Nope, I totally agree. I think that one's good. It really wouldn't be horrible. You could still just then do dex. You don't need a ton of intelligence, but those are like the two you're going to focus on.
Right.
And then as long as you get to fifth level in fighter, then you can do the other two artificers as well. You just don't want to miss out on that second attack, I think.
Right. What's killing me, I didn't realize this until you said it, and I'm seeing it here, is all of these options do not increase in damage until 18th level. That's insane.
I know.
You get it at 3.
No.
It does the exact same amount of damage from level 3 to 17.
It seems like a typo, right?
Right. And you don't even get more of them. That's my biggest issue.
You do.
No.
Oh, you get more options.
You get more
options.
You can't do more than what,
twice? You do not get more powerful for, you know, what you said, 14 fucking levels.
Besides the fact that you're getting extra attacks, you're getting all that stuff.
That's not Arcane Archer.
But if you... Okay, so yeah, no, I'm with you. I still agree, especially if you compare it to Battlemaster, which is inarguably the best fighter subclass.
I hate that class.
I know, because it's such an obvious pick. Because that, at least, you get more maneuvers as you level up. By the time you are the same level as your Arcane Archer, you've got... 5 of your Battlemaster techniques, maneuvers that you can do per short rest. And on top of that, you are getting more options too. So it's not like, you know, and the dice increases as well, where it starts, it's like a D8 and it goes up to a D12 in later levels.
And you get one at 7th and 15th level in addition. They just keep scaling.
So who looked at Arcane Archer and just said, no, that's too strong?
You know what I bet they want for 14 levels? Nothing.
I really cannot wrap my head around it because all you get is more options.
It seems dope though, right?
Arcane Archer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I'm really mad that I never even saw this in playtest. It just went straight to Xanathar's, and I feel like that would have been the first thing people yelled about.
I don't know. There's probably some balance reason, because you're far away.
I guess.
That's it. Nah, they always do that. You're far away, therefore you have to suck.
Right.
Ha!
And, like, don't get me wrong, there's still some really good stuff at, like, 7th level. All of your arrows count as magic. I don't think that's that great, but, what is it?
Curving shot
is good, where you make an attack roll with a magic arrow and miss. You can use a bonus action to reroll the attack against a different target within 60 feet of the original
target. That's cool. That's really cool, flavorful stuff. It's just the limit of 2 and how the damage doesn't scale on the arcane shot options.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2 per short rest.
Which isn't bad.
No. So it's kind of like if you do it, you know, the Wizards of the Coast, 6-day encounters today. We talked about that a bunch last episode. It's just effectively 1 arcane shot per encounter.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, some of them are good enough for that.
Some of them are.
Like banishing, you know.
Banishing, I think Grasping Arrow, I've talked about a bunch, I think is an extremely good one. It's almost it's too obvious of a pick. Creature hit by the arrow takes an extra 2d6 poison damage just right out the gate. Its speed's reduced by 10. It takes 2d6 slashing damage the first time on each of its turns it moves a foot or more without teleporting. And then it has to use an entire action against your save DC to try and get out of that brambles. Otherwise, they last for a minute. So that one's great because you're forcing them to use an action or take a whole bunch of damage if they move.
Right.
So I think that one is perfectly in line with being able to use it twice per day. My only issue is I feel like I would use that above just about everything, really. Yeah. Maybe Banishing Arrow.
God, I keep rereading them and being just mad.
Yeah.
Because my favorite thing with Banishing Arrow is after you reach 18th level in this class, a target also takes 2d6 force damage when the arrow hits it. Wow, great.
18th level.
Yep. I don't see why this isn't tied to your intelligence modifier. Just like Battlemaster is tied to your...
You mean just plus your intelligence modifier?
No. I think you should get the amount of shots equal to your intelligence modifier.
So that kind of makes the decision for people, and I think that's the reason why you would avoid that.
What do you mean makes the decision for people?
You get the number of shots due to your intelligence modifier. People wouldn't really have an option there. It's just you max intelligence. End of story.
I don't know, because then you're deciding between dex and intelligence. Obviously, going into Battlesmith, like we're talking, yes, you're just going straight into intelligence, and that would probably be a really good.
Right.
But that wasn't even out when this subclass came out. So I don't know if we can use that as an entire example. But, I mean, just having five, if you have 20 intelligence, you're telling me that having five of these would be too much. And maybe you make them weaker because you have five of them. I would rather have...
Honestly, you could do most of these, like, every shot.
And it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Like, the Ranger gets the amount of damage that some of these get.
That's a bad sign when we say a Ranger does something.
Right. I mean, okay, I am actually exaggerating, to be honest. But I don't think...
Yeah, a Ranger's dream of doing 2d6 at 18th level.
But I cannot think of a reason why tying this to the intelligence modifier would break it. And it really frustrates me because I know that there's a reason somewhere out there that Wizards of the Coast didn't look at this and say, two should be plenty, and then just never think about it again.
Yeah.
So because of that, I very frequently look at it when multi-classing out of, because I think that trying to stick in Arcane Archer, you're just going to feel like a dumb dummy as you get another option and you're like, okay, but I'm still just going to use my Banishing Arrow or my, which one is it? I've said it like six times, but the Grasping Arrow. It's like, I'm just going to use that every time, so why do I need more options? Like, you don't. That's fine. Just go to level 3 and then level up everything else. And you'll be happy.
Right.
But I still really like the idea of the Compound Bow, because that sounds badass. And that doesn't even have to be the Arcane Archer. That's just more of the arrowheads, reflavoring those. I think overall, reflavoring the fighter mechanics in a more artificery way is what could really make this a cool class, and making them more of like, you know, whereas before it's all of, oh, you're such a skilled fighter. In this case, it's like, oh, you made a piece of technology to allow you to do that thing.
Auto-loading crossbow is the obvious one.
Yep, definitely.
That's basically baked in there. How do you use technology to hit someone with a sword 4 times?
No, that one's not going to work. Okay. No, I mean, to some extent, it is just going to be you're a better fighter. But there are some, actually, I wrote down the unwavering mark being like something you throw on the enemy and it shocks them if they attack anyone else besides you. And that gives you an opportunity attack. And that's just like...
I hate the design of that, like just from like an engineering perspective. It shocks them if you attack anyone else. Why don't you just shock them the entire time it's on there? Just like... constantly. It's like, oh
good. Here's my pre-written response. Shut up. You shut the fuck up. No, you're totally right. It would make more sense to just shock them every time. But this is like somebody who's specifically trying to protect their friends and they need to do that. And they're only going to do it if it shocks their friends or if they attack their friends.
Yeah, like conditioning, classic.
Right. Conditioning. No, shock them.
Oh, yes. Pavlov studying dogs over a period of 7 to 19 seconds. None of these dogs are doing what I want. Throw them in the gulags. Pavlov, usually science takes more than a day and a half.
There's the hold the line ability from Cavalier, which is basically like kind of like Sentinel, where if they try and like run away, then you get an opportunity attack. If you hit, they stop their movement entirely.
Right.
I don't have a great one for that. The first thing that came to mind was like a utility belt that like whoosh, shoots out and grabs somebody. That felt stupid, but I feel like you could think of something better. Not you two, you guys are dumb, but somebody could think of something better.
A headband that shoots out and grabs them.
You're right, the belt was the bad part.
Yeah, no, the belt's busy holding up your pants. Your headband doesn't do anything all day. Stupid idiot.
Keeps sweat out of your eyes.
Wait, that's what they're for?
So overall, I mean, if you go through the fighter subclasses and just any of the things that you get with that artificer combination, just I would think of, okay, but how could this be technology-based? And not all of them are going to work. Some of them are, I mean, you're not going to look at the champion fighter and be like, oh, he crits on a 19 or 20. That's because his technology's so good. Like,
rocket-propelled sword.
Yeah, okay.
Just hits hard. It crits and hard. It's just, it really is inconsistent. That's what it is.
Right.
Well, that'd be badass.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I liked about the game Fallout 4 is that the rocket-powered hammers actually had a rocket that, like, activated when you swung them.
Yeah.
God, that's so badass.
For Battlemaster, like, trip attack, I'm picturing you're attacking them, and then, like, you click your heel, and this, like, scythe thing comes out of your foot, and you, like, whoosh.
It comes and hooks them?
Yeah. You, like, sweep the feet and trip them.
Yeah. Battlemaster is probably a bunch of these we could redo.
I know. It's just too obvious. Like, you literally can make up whatever you want for anything.
Right, and that's fun of it.
Yeah.
So, I think that's like, the one way that this would feel like a very unique multi-class, is just changing around the fighter stuff to fit the artificer.
Know your enemy finally has an explanation.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
Unexplainable battle scanner.
Right, right. It makes zero sense. It's an arcane battle scanner where you basically, like, you, like, have, like, the telescope eye that just, like, wee, 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 and then it just focuses in on perfect. Them for a minute. Oh, it's like, oh, yes.
Beep, beep, boop, boop, beep, 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 beep. He has 19 strength. What the fuck does that mean?
Oh, I set up a category of from 1 to 20. For six
skills.
Yeah,
I invented this, you know? Program my skill to do that.
That would actually be kind of hilarious.
That would be a little
why if you had an artificer who made up the concept of categorizing people from 1 to 20 on strength, dex, constitution.
Yeah, I mean, you can totally argue all, like, the entire concept of it. It's like five attributes. What the fuck are you talking about? I understand what the concept of strength is, but there's not, like, five things that make up a person. It's like, no, trust me, there are.
You're right. There are six. You forgot.
Oh,
charisma.
Oh, yes. It's like, how do you measure charisma? It's like, well, I don't know. I did the math.
Look at him. Look at him. Well, no, there's the magical spin to it. Yeah, that's all it is.
It's like, magic. I don't,
yeah. Oh, well, no, it just, it, shit. You know, it takes in his force of presence and spits out a number from 1 to 20.
So fucking dumb.
I don't know. We laugh about it, but, like, yeah. I wouldn't play it for a campaign. I'd play it for a one shot. It's something.
Oh, man, pushing attack. I'm just picturing the spring boxing mitt.
The spring box what?
Spring boxing mitt.
Oh, okay.
Out of the past.
I think they're just going to have a utility belt. And it doesn't have to be, like, around their waist, because that holds up their pants. But just random... we talked about
utility
this
utility harness.
Harness, yeah, exactly. Thank you, yes. I think we talked about this with all of their spells, basically, being, like, some piece of technology that they reworked. They get their own little infusion box, whatever, and you just make it just a thing. It's your punching glove that you pull out and just bring, and it pushes them back 5 feet.
15 feet.
Jeez, that's so good. Why can't Arcane Archer just take notes?
A precision attack, also using that same monocle thing.
Yeah.
Where you, like, yeah, take a step back. Yeah. I'm picturing where the individual lenses, like swipe
like
over.
Spy,
like,
Kids. Yeah. That's what it is. It's Spy, yeah, Kids where that happens. He, like, zooms in, and it's just, like, a bunch of lenses that just keep going in front, yeah, of each other.
High quality movie with high quality tech ideas.
Throw on 2 levels of paladin for that smite.
No.
Want it. That's where the rocket comes in. Just smite damage. It's a bit of a sillier character concept. I will say that.
The entire artificer has the potential to be kind of silly.
Yeah. There's 2 options.
You could also make it not silly.
No, it doesn't,
like, have to be. It doesn't have to be a bunch of lenses sticking half a foot out from their face.
But you're incorrect for just saying it's magic, Kevin. You should make a silly gadget character.
No, it can just be a monocle that, or even just glasses, goggles, whatever. Yeah.
That have a little magical heads up display on it.
It's still cool.
Yeah.
Showing you their weak point.
Fainting attack would obviously just be pocket sand.
Obviously.
Yeah. You can replace all these with just pockets.
What I love about that is just like all of these like technological excuses or magical excuses, and then there's just fainting attack, which is just throwing pocket sand on them.
In their eyes. Takes a skill.
If they wear goggles, it's also pulling it off their face and throwing the sand in.
Oh, it has a little mechanical arm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's the main thing I took away from this multi-class. Reflavor things to be silly.
Yeah.
Or serious.
What else is there? There's no, I mean,
evasive footwork, rollerblades.
No. Heelys. Rocket rollerblades.
Oh, okay. Or Heelys.
Or Heelys. Heelys. Magical Heelys.
Yeah.
That's all I need. Where I don't have to physically replace the wheel. I can just shoot it out of my foot.
It's the unlimited wheels.
Unlimited wheels? No man should have that much power.
Yeah, if I had one wish, I'd probably go with magical Heelys.
You know, I almost bought you Heelys for your birthday last year.
It's really hard to find them these days.
You were on a big Heelys kick last year, so I was like, is it worth spending $60 on buying him Heelys just for the joke of it? I don't think you'd wear them.
No, I mean, I don't actually own any other pairs of shoes, so I wouldn't be wearing the Heelys right now. These ones have fallen apart.
All right, well.
I actually don't know how to Heely, though. So
I know. You'd have to learn. That would be the fun part.
Where would I even learn that? I'm a 30-year-old man. You can't do that in public. I mean, if you see me Heelying around the mall as a 30-year-old guy, that's fine. But if you see me trying to learn to Heely as a 30-year-old guy, that is the bridge too far.
You can use my driveway. It's got a lot of cracks in it.
Oh, man. I don't want to chew beef on that.
Your driveway's gravel, so that won't work.
Yes, it is.
All right, so I'm going to put that on my list. By Will Heelys. How do we feel about Samurai Artificer?
I don't like it.
Techno Samurai?
There's no such thing as a Techno Samurai.
I feel like that's like a trope.
Yeah.
Somewhere in something that I've like never experienced.
No, the trope is that in anime, they, like, for some reason, the people who make anime have an affinity towards the samurai. So when they're combining it with random tech shit, they go with it.
Okay. So what you're saying is it's cool.
No, it's you're bringing your anime hobby to the table, which we all have discussed is not allowed.
I don't think that's what we discussed.
No, it's the healthiest thing for everyone.
90% of my campaign is based on anime.
I know, it's killing me.
It's not actually true. I wish it was. I keep trying to bring it in. It doesn't work. Okay. Disagreeing with Will because he's dumb. I think Samurai Artificer Battlesmith could be pretty cool. Honestly, I don't know why this bothers me, but Battlesmith, I feel like doesn't make sense only because you're getting like this steel defender and that doesn't feel samurai-ish. Like I've never seen a samurai who's like, oh yes, my pet dog. Like, no, that's not
well. I mean, also the origin of the class is like fixing shit,
right?
Samurais don't fix shit.
No, no. So I think artillerist is a lot more fitting there.
All the samurais with sentient cannons following them around.
No.
Yes.
They're not sentient.
Semi sentient.
Yeah, they semi.
They're aware of their
autonomous
surroundings.
There we go.
Autonomous.
That's probably a better word.
I think that makes a little bit more sense, though. Alchemist probably makes the most sense.
Yeah, I would say alchemist.
Yes, my... Oh, they're obsessed with tea.
There you go.
But it's
all very sweet tea.
Yeah. Alchemist ceremony.
Come on, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good.
All right, we got something here. And then their fighting spirit. Okay, so this...
No, none of it like really...
We're not there yet. Let's figure it out. This might happen. So, fighting spirit as a bonus action. You give yourself advantage on weapon attack rolls until the end of your current turn, which is amazing. You also get 5 temp HP... That increases at 10th level and 15th level. You can use that feature 3 times, not 2, shocker, come back on a long rest. Any way we can make that artificery?
Rocket katana.
This is so lazy, I love it.
Because then when you get to, rapid strike at 15th level, if you manage to get there, It's just an upgraded rocket katana.
Oh.
You put it on just different sides, so it's like you activate it, and it just like wildly swings the katana around in your arms.
That's so cool.
It's not. It's dumb as hell.
I know.
It wouldn't work.
That's shh. Kevin. All right. Shh. It's so gonna work.
Where would the rocket even go?
It comes out of the katana. Yeah.
Where?
It folds
on the blade.
In.
Yes,
on
it, like,
it folds
on
into
the
blade.
That's so dumb. You can't do that. That's
I know.
Not how it works.
I know.
I'm picturing like the rocket for the hammer, and unfortunately, that ruins it because your blade can only go like an inch deep into.
No,
the person.
It's actually just like little like firecrackers, basically, at the end of your katana, and you just light the fuse, and it just whoosh, just rockets it.
Oh man, you know what was really badass?
What?
In Rurouni Kenshin, the bad guy had a sword, and the sword was like serrated or some dumb shit. And he killed so many people that like there was fat in it, and he like slammed it on stone and it caught on fire. And you know, somebody wrote that like professionally. This sold millions of copies. It was like, yeah, that makes sense and is a thing that should be in this show and manga.
It's gross, one, yeah. But also really dumb.
Yeah, it was just like pointlessly edgy because they like zoomed in on the blade and showed like, oh, it's serrated. I mm-hmm. can see that.
Right.
And has a sheen on it of human fat. Oh, come on. Anime's so bad.
The temp HP probably doesn't make sense beyond just, again, fighting spirit. That's fine.
It shoots health darts into your eyes.
The sparks coming from the firecrackers just invigorate your eyeballs.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
It's got a magic welding mask that turns light into temporary hit points. Fuck it.
No. As I said, well, use
go
it. No, go, if go you have something, go
yeah,
for
go
it.
In the Alchemist route. It's a potion. You drink something and it like makes you focus and you can do the temp hit points in the sense of you are becoming harder to hit.
But actually, Kevin, you can't drink a potion as a bonus action, so this doesn't work.
Yes, so you can.
They inject it in the room.
There we go. Yeah. Everything's cooler when
it goes back to an original Artificer episode where you have like a tank of it on your back and an IV straight into your arm.
Like Bane?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
That actually was what I was thinking of for the injection thing for Second Wind, because that could be reflavored as an adrenaline shot.
Okay.
Because that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. You got to do it Pulp Fiction style right to the fucking heart.
Right.
Middle of combat.
Yeah, it'd be so cool.
I feel like that's dangerous to do repeatedly, regularly in an uncontrolled environment. With it's needles fine. That are obviously much larger due to the smithing techniques of your... whatever. It's fine. It's great. No, everything's awesome.
Look, man. After a long rest, everything gets better.
Yeah.
But no, I actually think that would be really cool. Just like, just pull it out and just stab it into your arm. Second Wind.
Fuck it. No, right in your eye.
Ooh, that'd be like in Cowboy Bebop. This is a lot of anime.
Yeah.
They've got the red eye where they like spray into their eye. It's a drug that you spray into your eye.
That was like 2 minutes of one episode.
No, that was like 30 minutes of an entire episode. It's like the second episode.
Yeah, the second episode was about that drug.
Yeah,
I know this is a ridiculous critique of that, but for some reason, aerosol in this D&D world just isn't clicking for me.
That's fair. That's fair. That's where I draw the line. Adrenaline into the heart? Fine. Aerosol into the eye? You shut the fuck up.
So, back to the listeners. Look that up for us. Was aerosol a thing before 1963?
I mean, you could just pressurize stuff. I've seen I guess it's somewhat mechanical, but just like pump things where it's like a little bottle that you just pump, 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 and then you can spray it. My mom uses it for cooking oil.
What?
She puts cooking oil in like a little bottle, and then it's got a
like
pump
a seltzer
on top,
bottle.
Basically, and then it's got a pump on top, and then you can press a trigger and it sprays.
Why would you want to pressurize your oil? It doesn't matter.
So that you don't have to use PAM or something like that. You
just people still use that, don't they?
No, they don't because they've got these bags in the bottles that they fill with red eye and spray their eyes with.
Okay.
No, I think I'm losing it.
Just a thicker spray then. Is that okay, Kevin?
Sure. Or actually, you could even pressurize stuff with just like tubes of water.
Yeah.
Or how air going at the top and the water pushing on it. And it's a thing that...
You can do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I'm... if you want to draw imaginary lines in this dumbass concept, fine.
I'm just picturing, when you were saying it, I'm picturing like a can of like body spray.
Right.
Oh. Like, I don't know, man. That just feels silly.
Ooh. All of these potions reflavored as deodorant.
Ooh.
Wait, I don't know why.
Axe body sprays. That'd be incredible. Oh my God. And you could name them too. It was like Swiftness. Well, that would be Phoenix, obviously. You guys don't know the Axe.
No.
Okay. All right.
What are you talking about?
They have like really edgy names, like Phoenix for every single one of their quote unquote scents.
Right. I mean, they are scents.
Yeah. So he was saying you each potion effect, you give one of the edgy names. Names. Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
Like Phoenix and I don't know, Blue Steel or whatever.
Blue Steel. This is Blue Steel. What the fuck's it do? Just tell us.
I don't know. It's my first potion of the day, and that one's random. So
resilience. There you go.
There,
plus one AC for 10 minutes.
There you go. Just creates like a thick waxy substance all over your body. I do really like the idea of an alchemist samurai. I shouldn't have even corrected myself. It's fine. I can pronounce it stupid. Nobody's going to correct me. But the battlesmith I don't see. Though it makes more sense mechanically. Though I think that would be one where it's good to just go, like, honestly, a 3-level dip into Artificer. It's not bad.
No. You know, you get your infusions and then...
The experimental elixir that you can just have a couple of per day. Those are pretty good. Honestly, the resilience is going to be your best one. The only thing that sucks, I keep coming back to, is that it takes an action to drink those, doesn't it?
Just drink it beforehand, bro.
Oh, yeah, that's always easy. I always know when combat's going to happen. Because then you run into that stupid thing where, like I would always try and do, that fucking asshole.
Can I do a free thing before combat starts? Sure, I attack the monster. Oh, fuck you.
Where I'd always be like, okay, like, can I, I'm going to use my channel divinity because, like, I see shit's about to go down. It lasts for a minute.
Right.
You know, can I do that? And I don't remember exactly. Sometimes you'd give it to me. Most of the time, no. I think that's fair.
There are things like this that are actually a decent way to start. Like, transition a neutral encounter to a combat encounter. Because you pop open your bottle and then drink. It's like, all right, everybody roll.
Now shit's going to go down, right? So, like, I think it makes sense in, like, storytelling wise, I think it's purely fair. Mechanically, it's like, well, that's kind of what you're supposed to do in initiative. And if I just give it to you for free, it feels a little weird.
Can I have this thing for free that's immensely beneficial to me? Is the question.
Right. So it's kind of hard because part of me is like, well, yeah, you can, but roll initiative because they're going to see you going for that bottle and now it's time to fight.
Right.
You know,
that like, was and they trigger? Might be quicker than
maybe
you.
Maybe he was thirsty. Kevin, we could never have a conversation with anyone. Everyone was like, bam, he's drinking already.
I don't know. It's hard. But 10 minutes is actually at least a good amount of time.
Yeah, it's a respectable amount.
Some are even longer.
Even swiftness, yeah, that's an hour.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. So, yeah, it just depends. Depends a lot. I think a lot of these I'd probably give the player to just drink beforehand.
Yeah, it just depends on the situation.
Yeah.
Some people also enter combat encounters, like, deliberately and with purpose.
Weird.
Like...
What's wrong with them?
Using stealth or intel. Not us, obviously.
No, we always bumble into it accidentally.
Whoop, what's that, monsters? What a wacky way to be.
So let me actually give a good example. The other day we had a combat where it was a... random encounter while traveling, those boars came and attacked you all. That would have been a great time where it's like, the boars are running towards you. It's like, okay, glug, 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 now I'm ready to fight.
Right.
It lasts for 10 minutes. You'll totally get it throughout the entire encounter here. I would honestly say that most encounters probably have some 6 seconds of setup along the way there that you could ask for it.
That just comes down to when you roll initiative.
Yeah.
Because you could also then just have them start 30 feet further back.
Oh, yeah. That's true. As you guys just take pot shots from 100 feet away.
Or how you about, drink your potion.
Or you drink your potion. I think that's everything. That's everything I have for this Fartificer. Oh, you said it.
I know. Kevin coined it, but I'm stealing it.
See, this is an exciting one because it's such a new class. I have not heard like the commonly used term for this multi-class. So I think Fartificer should be it.
Yeah.
You know, by the time we got into this, like, Sorcerer and all that was already established.
Right,
like,
right.
We're not going to get Palerderer to catch on.
But that one was so good, though.
Probably not. You're right, you're right.
But Fartificer, make it happen, people. Oh, there's enough of you, it could happen.
Otherwise, you're getting, like, Arditer.
It's Fartificer.
It's Fartificer. It's Fartificer, yeah.
God.
A bunch of 30-year-old guys laughing at fart jokes.
Hey, fuck you, man.
Well, you're not 30 yet. You're what, like 12?
Yeah.
You sure you can have that beer, buddy?
Yeah.
Always makes me think, like, back in, like, school, like, elementary school, even, like, that young, teachers getting, like, really upset and impatient with kids laughing at, like, fart and poop jokes, going as far to make comments. Like, there's no place for that in the real world. And, like, here I am, a 30-year-old man with a career and a family, giggling away at fart and poop jokes. Yeah. It just never really goes away.
It never does.
No. It's because of the just utter degradation of society. Yeah. Because the teachers weren't strict enough with the fart jokes, we have descended into madness. All hail the Fartificer.
All hail. But, yeah, closing thoughts. I honestly think it's pretty good. I still stand by. I think... Well, actually, I don't know. I almost have changed my own opinion. Reflavoring all of the fighter abilities into Artificer technologies kind of makes this pretty damn cool. So there's at least that. Make sure to try and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of cool ways to go about this. Mechanically viable ways, fun ways to go about it. It just depends on how you want to build it. As mm-hmm. it always seems to be with the fighter, it works pretty well.
Yeah, and it's almost just... Yeah, role-playing-wise, it's just like, yeah, just do it. I don't know. I mean... You don't have to jump through hoops.
Yeah, you can craft a character all around why you're this way, or that's kind of the backseat of things. That's the way you fight and approach problems, and here's all the other crap. Doesn't matter.
There's probably a really obnoxious Batman concept
going to ignore it. That's like the seventh time I've brought up Batman as a multiclass, just ignoring it.
Throw some rogue in there, man.
Feels right.
Don't play Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to throw some rogue in there.
He could do too much for one PC.
Yep, that's kind of the point. He's a superhero.
Yep.
Anyways, all right, so on to our promotional minute. So if you are not yet, make sure to...
People are so immature, it's fucking driving me crazy.
So with that, on to our promotional minute. If you are not yet, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts and leave a review if you can. Please do. I love seeing a new review. It makes me so happy. Subscribe to our subreddit, which is rmonsters_and_multiclass, and follow us on Twitter, which is @monsters_multi. We also have a Patreon. I did it again. Ooh, 2 weeks in a row. Got a Patreon where you can give us money to keep doing this and improve our quality. We hope to transcribe episodes. We hope to buy equipment to make our sound quality better or do giveaways or anything fun that we can do. So, yes, do all of that. And lastly, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to us at any of those places. We are obviously doing a Ask Monsters and Multiclass segment at the end of almost all of these now. It's been a blast. Please send more of those. We'll run out at some point, and that would be tragic. Now on to our Monster of the Week.
Cool. Everyone understands the concept of a trope. They've been around in folklore and myths and legends forever in all sorts of different cultures and variations, from cute little things to big terrifying monsters. They are also present in D&D, as D&D seems to take from folklore and mythology from all across the world. Of course, in the sense, the big scary monster one. The base troll from the Monster Manual is probably everyone's fallen once with its one little regeneration trick up its sleeve. And then in Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes, they've added a bunch more, just kind of variations to add to it. To be honest, I don't think there's anything super surprising about trolls, but one thing I did to get out of it, of actually reading all of them in depth, is they're absolutely gross as hell. I never connected that before, and like now reading them, I was like, yeah, these things are fucking gross.
In what way?
the regeneration ability, honestly, I always saw it as it was kind of like this like clean healing thing. And it's more like their flesh like bubbles and comes back, and like you could chop off an arm and the arm's still animated, and other trolls could like grab that arm and like wound themselves and shove that arm in the wound, and then the flesh just kind of in a mass of scar tissue takes it over.
Yeah,
and shit like that.
I think what I really appreciated about that is it really goes to show that if you had this weird regeneration where you could just always just cut yourself and it just heals in like a second, you would probably just not care about getting hurt, really, ever. Mm-hmm. The idea of cutting yourself to shove an arm in the wound wouldn't be like a terrible thing to experiment with. It would be like, let's see what happens. You know, worst comes to worst, my body heals itself in 2 seconds anyways, right?
I hope I never get to the point where I'm thinking in that way.
I know, that's what makes them so...
I found this arm, what's the worst that could happen? Oh, sweet.
That's what I'm saying, is that they actually do a pretty good job of changing how, or really encapsulating how this creature would think, where its mindset would be very different from ours, because if we found an arm or killed somebody and ripped off their arm, we wouldn't think to cut ourselves and shove it into our bodies. God, that's so messed up even just saying it. It's extreme. It's crazy.
Right.
But for trolls, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I think the interesting thing about trolls is they have their main regeneration ability, right, as you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And that's always been a bit of a point of contention in the D&D metagaming question. Yep. Because it's one of the main things where people ask, should players know that damaging a troll with fire or acid stops its regeneration? And if you didn't know that, I'm so sorry for spoiling it for you. That, I guess...
Yeah. I'll spoil. Now you can join the metagame question.
Right.
Yes. So just in case you're not familiar with how it works, at the start of every turn, the troll regains 10 hit points. Even if it's down to zero, it will still come back alive with 10 hit points. Chopping its head off and stuff like that doesn't stop it from regaining the 10 hit points. The only thing that stops the regeneration is if in that round it takes fire or acid damage, then it does not regenerate for that round. And if it hits 0 hit points without regeneration, then it dies. That's how you kill a troll.
Right. And beyond that, I mean, its attacks aren't anything too crazy. It gets a bite, +7 to hit, 1d6 plus 4 piercing damage, and a claw, +7 to hit, 2d6 plus 4 slashing
damage. Two claws. It hits kind of hard.
It does. It hits hard.
Challenge rating 5.
But it's not like it's particularly interesting.
Right. Yeah. 84 hit points, 15 AC. Yeah, nothing else too crazy about it. The regeneration is really what makes it an interesting fight.
Right.
At least this version of the troll. And yeah, I don't know if you want to go on the metagame dilemma of it.
Yeah, so the question always comes down to is, should players know that they need to burn or acid this thing? Is there a verb for aciding something? Is that, I'm going to stick with just saying acid it. So there's no real...
Burn.
I say, yeah, yeah. It's still burn.
Chemical burn it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
Apply acid damage.
So, you know, it's like you always want to keep in that mentality of what does my player or what does my character know, not what do I know. Because if we go off of what I know, I've read the Monster Manual front to back, as well as a lot of these other ones, and we all know a lot about monsters. So when you fight them, it's like kind of this weird balance of you have to forget what Kevin actually knows in favor of what Embers knows.
Right.
With trolls, it becomes difficult because it's such common folklore that it's almost too obvious and difficult for the characters, where it's this binary thing where either they know it, they know that you need to burn it, or you need to burn it with acid, or they don't know it at all, and they're never going to figure it out. So how do we, you know, make a troll an interesting fight when the thing that makes it interesting is known to everyone?
Right.
The answer is you don't.
Right. And then to add on that, so if you say, all right, my character's not going to know this, they never count trolls, they're rare in this world, it almost hinders you more than someone who just, like, a player who truly didn't know, because fire and acid damage is common, mm-hmm. and they might just happen to do it.
Right.
Whereas if, like, you know it, but you're saying your character doesn't, and so you actively avoid it, you take out that chance of, like, accidentally figuring it out.
Right.
So then when is it acceptable to make your character happen to do fire damage and realize, oh, I guess I did do something.
Right. Right.
Round, two rounds, three rounds. It's like, yeah, I don't.
Because if you have a character who, let's say, does cold damage, that's their thing. They like doing cold damage. Cool. First round, I do cold damage. Oh, it regenerates. Okay, I keep doing cold damage. It keeps regenerating. Are they going to be like, oh, maybe I should try a different element? Because they didn't see any other elements work. Why would they think that? You know, so same deal. Like, why? Right. Why after, maybe after four rounds, they're like, okay, I'm going to try something different. And then they go through any of their other possible spell concoctions. But officially, if you have a party that has zero acid or fire damage, then this is going to be a real weird fight. All you can do is basically take a torch and try and burn it, which doesn't right. officially do any damage, but might just stop the regeneration.
One right. improvised fire damage.
Yeah, which yeah. is all you need.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. It's a very, very hard sell to say that standing in a bonfire does not do damage.
That's so. Definitely a hard sell. But it's also, again, it's like, why would your character think of that if they don't understand what a troll
exactly.
is?
Exactly.
You know, well, there's, and usually our argument is like, oh, well, you know, give some hints towards your players. But what hint can you give? How can you say like, oh, it regenerates and it seems like that regeneration would have been hindered by fire? Okay, now say that in a way that isn't just saying do fire damage.
Right.
There's nothing.
It's my personal position that the idea of exploring resistances and effects like this sounds a lot more fun than it ever ends up being just because of things like this. Like, it's either a big thing where everybody knows it like this, or it's something that's going to just be kind of a headache.
Right.
I think in a lot of fights, there's just not enough time to actually explore something like that.
Right.
And you'll never see these things again.
Right.
In 9 out of 10 encounters. So I don't know.
Yeah. I'd say if it was like a whole quest arc or something, then it could be somewhat interesting where you just tell but you still have to tell the players beforehand, hey, you guys don't know how a troll dies. Okay, we're all on the same page. You don't know. But now the players have to go fight the troll and they have to consciously make the decision to retreat, maybe, and like get more information.
Right.
That's not going to happen organically.
Right.
You know, because you either had to tell them beforehand or I don't know.
Yeah.
Or see, you're just being a dick
I'm
DM.
I'm kind of in the boat of when it comes to something like this where it's really just concrete. If the player knows it, the character knows it. It's so hard to, like, there's a lot of different things where I can not metagame and put it aside.
Mm-hmm.
But for something like really just concrete and obvious like this, it's really hard to avoid it.
No, I'm totally
and
with
it
you.
It still adds another element to a fight. It's not like this crazy, complicated, in-depth fight.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now every round somebody needs to figure out a way to do acid or fire damage. It's just an extra little layer.
Right.
On top of what would otherwise be a straightforward fight.
Right.
And that's still some interest.
And to give an example with our current party composition, you, Embers, don't have any way to do either of these damage types. Musty, you might have some acid damage.
I don't have any cantrips, but I do have like a flaming sphere, for instance.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay, that's
would
a
be,
resource you have
in
to
a
use.
Troll fight. I would, I would just cast it. You know what?
Yeah.
And yeah. I would be like, fuck it. Yeah.
Okay.
I Musty knows the trolls can't do that.
There's that one smite,
which burning smite.
Damage, I guess. Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay. Flame Sphere kind of ruins it because I think they take fire damage regardless if they're next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like no way for them to get around it. You literally just smack it into them and they take some fire damage. Okay. That kind of, I don't want to say ruins this fight, but that's something you have to think about as the DM
right.
is if they do know it, is this going to be any, are they even going to get the regeneration off ever? Because if we encountered a troll in a random encounter, very first turn, what's Musty doing? Flame Sphere, smack it into it every time.
But he uses a resource and a different spell that he wanted of. And
fine, and that's totally fine. What I would, in my perfect world, what you would really want is the Eldritch Knight who has Firebolt. Now he has to hit with Firebolt or else this thing regenerates. That's an interesting fight. If there's right. any ability there where it's like, no, it's going to take fire damage or acid damage every turn, then it's just a regular fight.
This is a great actual, like that particular availability would make should make a DM more comfortable throwing 2, 3, 4 trolls.
Right.
Whereas
right.
if that didn't exist, it's like that is now a theoretically unwinnable fight.
Right.
If only one person can do one bucket of fire damage per turn, that is challenge rating infinity for some situations.
Yeah, it's true.
Especially if the trolls are smart enough for all three of them to gang up. on him. And like, they hit hard.
It says specifically in their lore that they will attack somebody who is doing fire or acid damage. Because they know that this is their aversion. So I think to some extent, that's the only saving grace is, okay, Musty casts Flame Sphere. Now that troll's going to go over to you and try and rip your head off and break concentration.
Fucking metagaming trolls.
It's the troll's fault for metagaming. So I'm totally with you though, Kevin. We've had this conversation outside of the podcast plenty of times. At the end of the day, it's just easier if people know, and it's up to the DM to kind of work around the fact that they already know.
Right. You mentioned the lore. So the lore of the trolls in 5e is really, really lackluster. There's nothing to it.
No.
And does not talk about where they come from, why they do what they do.
There's a little bit. Just a little bit in Morton Cadence.
About where they come from?
Not where they come from. Nope. Just why they are the way they are.
Oh, like the weird ones, which...
No, there's this bit around Vaprak, the Destroyer.
Yeah, they're quote-unquote god.
Yeah, it's like they're not really religious, but I guess they do have a god. And the entire idea is that they don't... They get eaten by him if they've been burned or acided. God, I hate that. Can we not think of a better word? I'm just going to keep saying burned, and we're going to all understand that that means both.
Accosted, but spelled like caustic. You just watched English being done.
So, the idea is that he basically looks like a troll. He's a weird spiritual god of some sort. And once the trolls have been cooked, then he'll eat them. Otherwise, he's like, nah, you're not done yet. And he just shoots them back. Okay, that's it.
Okay. Do they want that or not? They didn't say.
It doesn't say because they don't care.
There's the crabby lords. I don't know. Man. You're right, though, Kevin. It is kind of weak. But they are giants, which is interesting.
Yeah, that was another.
But they're not in the Ordning at all.
Right.
Like, all the other giants are like, oh, hill giant. They're the bottom of the totem pole. Trolls, it's like, okay, they're kind of giants. They'll work for giants. They'll also work for orcs. They'll work for anyone who's like, hey, I'll give you money and food.
Right.
Okay. They're pretty blank slates.
Yeah. I mean, they have a language. They speak giants and some minor intelligence. So, yeah, I mean, they can be spoken to and negotiated with and all that. But it's not a big part of who they are or anything.
I would say from a general world building standpoint, there's definitely a argument to be made of, does every single creature need to have deep lore in this whole purpose? No, not really.
No, that's
but
true.
This one just doesn't have it. And that's fine. It doesn't particularly need it.
Yeah. I love the monster manual, the variant loathsome limbs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are fun.
Which I don't know why you want to do this. It's when you, if you deal at least 15 slashing damage, you roll d20 as the DM. 1 to 10, nothing happens. 11, 14, 1 leg is severed. 15, 18, an arm is severed. And 19, 20, the troll is decapitated, but it doesn't die, by the way. It's just decapitated. And then these limbs and heads are on the ground, and then they could do things as well. They can move around and beat up on people, or the troll could pick them up and reattach them or whatnot. It just adds kind of an extra little neat dynamic.
Yeah, because that actually is fun. Say the severed arm, the severed leg's kind of pointless. It the leg has a speed of 5 feet and it can't attack, so that's not really worth doing.
Right.
But the severed arm, speed of 5 feet, can make one claw attack on its turn with disadvantage on the attack roll unless the troll can see the arm and its target. So, cool. I like that.
Yeah.
It also loses a claw attack on its... The troll itself loses the claw attack after the arm is severed. That's good. When the head is severed, the troll loses its bite attack. Its body is blinded unless the head can see it. The severed head has zero speed and... What is it? It has the keen smell trait, which is important, not important, and it can make a bite attack against a target in its space.
Right.
It's just kind of cool. That's really all it comes down to.
Yeah.
And I could see the troll just picking up the head and kind of like placing it on and wobbling it around and hoping that it reattaches, and it's flavorful.
Right. Yeah.
It's not like it changes up the fight to the point that it's like, ooh, the action economy is different once you have all of its arms severed.
Once
the fight
you have an immobile head that can only attack things that is literally holding it.
Right. But it's still cool.
Yeah.
That's actually, and it is also a hilarious way to deal with a party that does not have fire and acid damage. Like, this is like a critical way to do that. You just basically turn this into a fight where they try and wrangle these arms and legs and heads so they don't get back together, while they start a bonfire over like four turns.
Right? That's pretty good. You're right. I think against a level three party, this would be pretty cool.
That'd be hilarious, honestly. And then be fun, I think, for the players too.
Yeah.
But also at level three, this thing's going to just smack. I mean, it does a lot of damage for CR5. You're right, right, Kevin. And it's got a good amount of HP too. It's 84. It's not bad.
Yeah. But then, like, though, if you use its variant, like every time you take off an arm, it loses a claw attack.
Mm-hmm.
Take off its head, it loses its bite attack. Take off both legs, it falls prone, and its speed becomes, what, zero? Never mind. If it has arms, it could crawl. With no arms or legs, the speed is zero.
Right. So it's basically going to be the party, like, cutting this thing into multiple pieces.
Yeah, just figuring out how to do 15 slashing damage.
As the arms, like, crawl over to the torso, and you're, like, grappling the arms, and they're clawing onto it. It's like, make the bonfire go!
Right.
So, you're right. That's actually kind of fun. I like that. But there, you need to, like, it's such a specific scenario where you're the DM, and you go, oh my god, this party doesn't have any fire or acid damage. And by the time they make a fire, it's like, we'll just light a torch. And
this sounds like it needs to be the opening encounter for the Swole Coast.
Oh my god. That's actually a great point.
So what if magic is gone? We're huge. It doesn't matter. Oh, fuck.
Odysseus, get the torch.
I ain't lighting the torch. I don't know how to do that. I always made the wizard do that with magic. Can you even start a fire without that?
They have to go run and find a different fire.
The ancient fire that you have to breed it from.
Oh my god.
Wait, draw storage straws to see who has to do the cardio to sacrifice the game.
Why are we not doing this already?
It's much funnier just to talk about it.
I don't know, man. I think it actually, it'll work out in practice. I just have to write a one shot one of these days. Yeah.
So with the troll, so after a short
rest, we're talking about a troll. Yeah,
it'll regrow its missing limbs and all that.
Right.
What happens to the severed limbs? Do they grow a troll off of it?
They die.
Oh. No, they grow lemons.
They grow lemons?
Yeah. For no reason.
Just like a rotting troll arm, and there's a beautiful, lovely lemon branch off at the end of it.
Oh, that's where they came from.
All right, moving on.
All right.
Mordekaine has added a whole bunch.
Whole bunch of
different trolls. The idea behind these is, so with the regenerator properties, if like a troll's basically just decimated and fully regenerates within the presence of some sort of magical force, it could impact what they become.
It doesn't even have to be, I think, to that extent. It more of just like when it regenerates, it can just be weird. So it doesn't always have to be magical, though. That is like the main reason.
That's what it talks about. Yeah.
Do you want to fight, man?
I was just reading it. If they're like regenerate from your scraps, if they're just absolutely destroyed,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of chance for mutation in these. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
True. Right. But no
regenerations. But yeah. And then
the specific regeneration more happens because of external forces.
Right.
The first one is the dire troll, which is
actually doesn't follow that, but
it doesn't follow that at all.
Yeah. That's fine. It's neat.
Yeah. This is the one that will basically graft flesh off from other trolls and just attach it to itself to grow in size and get new limbs and legs.
Yeah. Well, actually, it starts out by eating other trolls.
Oh,
so
right.
Trolls will eat just about anything, but in rare cases, they'll eat other trolls. And when one does that, becomes a dire troll. And it's that, I guess, due to the compounding of the regeneration magic or something. I don't know. I got an idea.
Because when you eat troll, you eat the troll meat. As a troll, the troll meat can't hurt you or whatever. But the meat, while it's digest, now
it's acid stomach. Yeah.
I don't know. They don't actually have the stats.
It doesn't really explain why.
Can a troll have an acid stomach? I don't know. But yeah, they used to be huge.
The force stone, we just pulverize everything down.
I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Anyways, yeah, these dire trolls, something kind of switches in their mind, I guess, where they just crave to become as big as possible, so they just look for more troll flesh to consume, and then, yeah, graft other troll bits onto them.
I'm seeing more parallels to the Swole Coast. That's not the proper way to get gains, bro. Some of us worked hard for ours.
This guy's not natty.
It definitely pumps up the challenge rating, though. Goes from a CR5 normal troll to a CR13 dire troll.
Yeah.
The regeneration is the same, which is a little...
Is it? No, it's not. This one was different. So this regeneration is, which I thought was really interesting.
Oh.
Regains 10 hit points at the start of its turn, like normal. If the troll takes acid or fire damage, it regains only 5 hit points at the start of its next turn.
Right, and it only dies if it, by an attack that deals 10 or more fire damage when the troll has 0 HP.
Yeah, acid or fire. Yeah, so it's harder to kill.
So like the torch that we're talking about wouldn't be enough, because that's only one. Interesting. It also has got damage resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing. 172 HP. Yep, yeah. Sorry, to non-magical. The multi-attack is just kind of absurd and can be toyed around with to however many attacks you want this thing to have, but it makes 5 from the base stat block, 1 bite and 4 claw attacks. The bite does poison damage, so that's an addition there of 1d10 poison damage. It's got its claws, which do 3d6 plus 6 each and plus 11 to hit. I mean, this thing hits hard, but most importantly, it has its whirlwind of claws. Which is a recharge ability on 5 or 6. Each creature within 10 feet of the troll must make a DC 19 dex saving throw or take 8d10 slashing damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful.
Yeah.
That's a lot of damage.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And that's all this thing's going to do is a lot of damage and take a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So it's basically like when you find out that trolls are a thing, but your party's already level 8 and you're like, oh... Well, I guess I could throw this at them.
Right. Or just to change it up and have them, they fought trolls before and it's...
But if you fought trolls before in a campaign, it's like, do we really need another troll fight? Have we really run out of monsters in the monster manual?
And then you throw a dire troll.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. We'll
change things up. Trick them a little bit.
It's just like one word and it hits harder and has more health.
It's harder to kill.
And it's harder to kill.
Yeah, I mean...
But 10 fire or acid damage at level... 8 or 9, which you should be around that point, shouldn't be impossible.
But it has to be at 0 health. The timing needs to be
right
there.
Right.
That could get tricky.
That would be... Oh, man. If you just, like, got your initiative order all fucked up or
something. Well, I guess you
like
could
that.
Just hold a spell.
But again, that's...
still fuck it up at least once.
Right. At least once where you're going to be like, oh, shit, this thing isn't dead, even though we hit it with acid damage or something.
Right. And yeah, you might start wondering if, all right, is it a different elemental type? You may not jump to, oh, it has to be when it's at 0.
Yeah,
like, that's a little bit of a leap.
I think the perfect thing about this dire troll is it changes it up just enough that veterans are going to be like, what do I do here? I could even see bringing that thing out in 6 months from now, and you guys aren't going to remember the specifics of how it dies.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to be like, okay, I know it was something different, but what was different?
Right. How do we change? How do I... Oh, yeah.
More fire damage.
Flaming sphere.
Yeah.
Just park that bad boy right where it's been the whole fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably won't throw this at you guys anytime soon. Next up is the Rot Troll, though.
Yes, when it's infused with waves of necrotic energy as it regenerates. So this is then going to the magical energy around and all that. It's just basically a troll that's rotting. That's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Challenge rating 9, 138 hit points. Rancid degeneration. So actually, yeah, that's unique. It's opposite of the regeneration. At the end of each of the troll's turns, each creature within 5 feet take 2d10 necrotic damage unless the troll has taken acid or fire damage.
Yeah, so this thing does not have regeneration.
Right.
Which is important. And this at least feels like a change of form for the troll. So I appreciate that.
Right.
It's not the same concept of, well, do the damage so that it stops healing and you can actually kill it. You can officially just bash on this thing till it's dead.
Right.
I like the implications of this one, because the idea is that this energy's infused into its body. And it's using, it is healing, like, constantly. But that entire heal is being used every turn by the rot.
Right.
And so when you stop its healing, the rot stops, so it stops emanating this stuff.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, okay, yeah. That makes sense. That's kind of cool. Beyond that, mechanically, I mean, it's a troll that hits a little harder and does some necrotic damage.
Biting claws with necrotic, yeah, we don't need that.
If you are a primary melee-focused party, it's going to be a bitch.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Then Spirit Troll, this one is a regenerator on psychic energy.
This one's dumb. I'm gonna pull a Will on this one. I absolutely hate this one.
So it's saying it regenerates a non-physical form and loses its body and becomes a spiritual thing, but it may not be aware of it and will still go around biting and clawing at people, but it's dealing psychic damage now.
Its psyche survives, but the body of a spiritual is insubstantial as shadow.
So it's a ghost.
Yeah, basically it's a ghost troll. Challenge rating 11, armor class 17, 97 hit points, strength of 1, which is just interesting, I don't know. Damage resistances of acid, cold, fire, lightning, and thunder, and immunities from bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks. Also condition immunities of exhaustion, grappled, paralyzed, petrified, prone, restrained, and unconscious. So, a lot of stuff that just doesn't happen with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much like a ghost. Interesting how silvered weapons do have no impact, but...
Oh, yeah, that is... Because it's not... It's a spirit troll. Yeah. It's not a ghost troll.
I don't know if ghosts and race and all that are affected by...
I think ghosts...
That might be like a... I don't know. That might be an older thing or just general folklore we're thinking of. Anyways, yeah, incorporeal movements. It can move through other creatures and objects as if they weren't there. Its regeneration is the same except for its... stops from psychic or force damage,
which
is a lot harder to pull off unless you have a warlock.
And I'll also say that at least it's somewhat interesting that the damage it deals is also what stops its regeneration.
Right.
You have to deal psychic damage, but it's also dealing psychic damage.
Right.
Okay, you probably might be hard to figure that out. If you have a bard, then they've got Vicious Mockery to do psychic damage.
Right, yeah.
Magic Missile is force damage.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but it's going to be hard to figure out.
Yeah, there's a lot less of it than fire and acid.
Definitely.
Yeah, 3 attacks, 1 of its bite, 2 of its claws, usual type of... Actually, no, its bite's different. Plus 7 to hit, reach 5 feet, 3d10 plus 3 psychic damage, which also was not really resisted ever,
right,
basically.
Right.
And then a DC 15 wisdom saving throw will be stunned for a minute. You could redo it at the end of each turn.
Right.
Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, stunned
it's kind of like this... Actually, this is a really good thing to throw at a barbarian that you're really frustrated with.
I was gonna say,
spiritual flanked by mind flayers.
But at the same... They're not resistant to psychic damage. It's literally everything but psychic damage. Barbarians are resistant
to.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're right. This would be a great one to throw against them.
And it's claw 2d10 plus 3 psychic. So just a different variation on it.
Definitely. I really just hate the flavor of like, it dies, but it doesn't know that it dies. Like,
why?
I actually kind of like the idea, but it's just, it is pretty dumb.
Hey.
Ooh. I don't
why is the troll blasted with psychic energy?
Maybe that's how they killed him last time.
So I will say that I also think it's very difficult to throw that type of enemy into your game at all. The one instance I could think of naturally for it to happen is if your party is fighting a troll and the bard kills it with psychic damage, then you can bring back a spirit troll and it's like, haha, now deal with this, which is going to be weird. The other way
supposed to happen like years after it. I don't know, man.
It doesn't matter. Then the other way I was thinking of is if your party is basically, if it's like a random encounter, your party's walking down the road, they hear a commotion, they go and check it out, and that person kills it with psychic damage. That takes away the agency of the players, but now they like see the troll get killed and come back as a spirit troll, and that person, whoever it is probably going to get torn apart because they're like, oh, I succeeded. And it's like, nah, you didn't.
Yeah.
And now they have to deal with it.
Or they just run into a spirit troll that's out in the wild.
I know.
They don't have to be part of the creation. It's just like,
no, they don't.
It's in the dungeon. Or whatever,
but it would be nice if they were around for it, only because I say so. Doesn't have to, just some ways to do it.
Yeah.
They say there's always the option of just like, it's a thing that's there and they're told to go kill it because quest.
Yeah. Or it's just a monster you populate a dungeon with.
Yeah.
That's what trolls kind of are. It's like you populate them, populate dungeons, random encounters,
beef Why up do on these trolls numbers, stuff like live that. In this room? There is no reason. These trolls have always and will always live in this room.
It's where they sleep and they hoard their food there and then they go out to get more stuff and then... things like that. Or like a spiritual, absolutely, I could see, you know, but adding some ghost elements to it and they're like attached to this area.
Thank you for the spooky ghost noises. Yes. Will.
It's all right, I guess.
I don't hate it as much as you guys.
That's okay.
It's just variation.
If we had the same opinions on everything, this show would suck.
Yeah.
Kevin, how would you feel about a fire troll?
Fine. Okay. That was one of the things I was going to say is like, you could then just kind of homebrew these with... really, any element.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah.
Oh, it was shocked by lightning as it regenerated, and now it is a venom troll, but everything
is regenerated during a thunderstorm.
Ooh.
Or is thrown into a volcano and no, that's fire.
That's
yeah, okay.
That's why I was trying to bully
Never
you.
Mind.
There
yeah.
is a limit to this.
You're right. Yeah, oh, fire troll would
right.
be a little silly.
Because if it was thrown into a volcano, it should just die. That's
yeah,
the point.
Imagine
that's
being the dick DM who's like, oh, you threw all the trolls into the volcano? Oh, now they're lava trolls. Yes. I am very all smart. Right.
That being the reason they're about dumb, but just like having a different type of troll, that's a really common thing you'll hear about. People trying to tackle that issue we talked about at the beginning of,
yeah.
oh, everyone knows it's fire and acid. And well, this is just a different troll. It's lightning and thunder damage stops its regeneration because it's just different.
And out of the abyss, didn't we fight a sea troll or something?
Yeah.
Those are just trolls that swim, dude.
That was
yeah,
still weird.
It didn't have different regeneration. But yeah, they had a swim speed, and
it did in the sense that it was almost always resistant to fire because it was in the water.
Right, but it still took the fire damage, yeah. stopping its regeneration. So it just kind of made it more annoying.
A dire troll would have been a real bitch in that fight.
Oh yeah.
All right, last one is the venom troll.
Yep. This is the one where if it gets killed by like massive doses of poison, it will come back as a venom troll. Challenge rating 7, arm class 15, 94 hit points, immunities to poison and being poisoned.
I wonder why. We should think on that for a little bit. Why would it be immune to poison damage? Will?
I think it does. I think it's poisonous, man. I think this is the poison variant we were talking about.
Can we look that up?
Oh, man.
All right. So, sorry. All right,
this one does have a couple of unique things. Poison splash. When it takes any damage, but psychic damage, each creature within 5 feet take 2d8 poison damage. Just happens. No save. It's not a reaction. It's just every time it is hit by anything other than psychic, 2d8 poison damage splashes out of it.
Chef's kiss. That's a beautiful flavor. I love that. Just yep. a slash across this thing and just opening up.
And you could really see that from the art with it. It's just bloated. And
mm-hmm.
kind of looks like the orc venom or disease bombs.
Yep.
Yeah. It's regeneration. Yeah, 10 hit points again. If it takes acid or fire, that's basically all the same. And then... yeah, bite and claw, like everything else, though, it's will do additional poison damage, and the creature's poisoned until the troll's next turn from the bite. And then it's venom spray, which is a recharge of 6, where it slices itself with its claw, which is just cool.
Mm-hmm.
Releasing a spray of poison, a 15-foot cube, the troll takes 2d6 slashing damage, and it can't be reduced in any way. Each creature in the area must make a DC 16 con save. On a failed save, they take 48 poison damage and are poisoned for a minute. On a success, half damage, and they're not poisoned.
Yeah, and I love the idea of this because it's just as I said, where if you have this like constant regeneration ability, you're going to start treating your body a little bit differently. You know, whereas if I could just regenerate, maybe if I was really upset at somebody, I'd just cut open my body and spray blood on them to get out of a situation. It sounds absolutely ludicrous in normal day conversation, but if I'm just going
to heal
up... I don't
know, that's a pretty good way to express that you're frustrated about right. the situation.
So it's like, it's taking it to that extreme, of course, but like this thing just knows like, yeah, I can cut myself open and it's just going to heal right back up. It's going to hurt you a whole lot more than it's going to hurt me.
Right.
So just for that, I really like the flavor of it.
Yeah.
Just cut open your hand, palm of your hand, and just spray blood on somebody's face.
Right. When, jugular.
Yeah.
Exacto knife to the jugular whenever I get mad. Ah, but you people feel like dummies covered in blood. To the hospital. Away.
Ka-chunk. but this one's cool, and I think it comes in a situation where you're like, you know, kind of... a single troll fight's just not going to be too interesting. Say, we talked about a level 3 party fighting a CR5 troll. Just gives you a little bit more variation. If there's going to be a couple of trolls in the fight, then it might be good to throw in a venom troll or two. I don't think there's any reason why any of these trolls wouldn't be in packs besides the dire troll.
Right.
Like, if you wanted a rot troll and a venom troll just hanging out together... that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
Right.
As well as some normal trolls, if it makes sense.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, mix and match them. Stock your dungeons with these. Bolster various troops that hired these things with them.
Buy them for your friends on Christmas.
Yeah. That being said, I can see various mercenaries and orcs and all that being really reluctant to hire to have a poison troll or a rot troll around.
Right. It does say that, like, they can be hired, but they're difficult to work with. It's right. not like you're just going to be like, hey, I need you to do this specific task. And they're like, okay. Yeah. No, they're going to be kind of dicks about it.
Yeah. So. Or hags. I guess trolls are real common to work with hags. And it's not so much being hired, just manipulating. They respect their power.
Yeah. Especially that one I could see.
The Annis hag.
That one I could see a little more, where the trolls aren't going to try and screw over hags.
They, yeah. It's like, we have a good life here with the hag. We're just, yeah. That
we,
sort of thing.
We go out and kill things when she tells us to. And it's fine.
We get to eat.
Yep.
So these are cool. I guess, yeah, no shocker, but trolls are not going to be your big baggy evil guy. And they're not going to be your mastermind. You know, it's going to be hard to weave intricate plots and arcs around them.
Oh.
Kevin, you're not thinking this enough. What if you grafted hundreds of troll heads onto each other and created a troll mastermind?
We're taking just like a ball of them?
Yes, like a ball of them. And it starts to take like the texture and appearance of a brain.
Oh my God, I love
just
it.
Just like melted faces.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God, the elder brain for the like elder mind flayers is just trolls.
But it only has like int 70.
Actually, okay, this is taking it to an extreme, but I like where you're going with it. There could be like an elder brain for trolls who starts amassing so many troll heads that it magically, of course, starts controlling other trolls. And now there's been like an uptick in trolls attacking villages, or they're just working together. They've become a more cohesive unit. I don't know if you want to make a whole campaign around that,
right?
But I don't know. I'd be down to
like an arc, like an adventure arc.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad about that.
Yeah, or I even just a dire troll that just got way out of hand and way too, because every time they eat another troll, they just get bigger and bigger.
Right.
So just a massive fucking tall as a mountain dire troll.
Okay, totally awesome there. And what I would add on top of that is the dire troll isn't the one who's making it so huge. Somebody else like captures a troll,
like the Nagpa.
And they like the Nagpa. The Nagpa, oh, it'd be so good. The Nagpa starts capturing trolls and like grafting them onto each other. Like you cut off an arm of one troll and you use that thing as like a body farm, and you just keep letting it grow parts, and then you attach it to another troll until this thing is just absolutely.
Oh man,
huge.
You know what'd be just fucking twisted on that idea? Just like, oh, this crazy, horrible, smart creature's like, all right, and he just tastes like torso after torso and arm after arm and creates a trollipede. It's like, why'd you make that? It's like, I don't know. It's kind of funny, right?
That sounds like something a necromancer would do for sure.
For sure. Or the Nagpa, like not so much the arm thing, just making a absolutely gargantuan city destroying dire troll.
Yep.
Just keep feeding the trolls and it'll keep growing.
Yep.
And then
point it in the right direction.
Yep.
There you go. No, that's, there you go. God, we need to make an entire Nagpa campaign some of the day. It's going to be ridiculous.
The 970 page Nagpa.
All leading up to still a pretty good fight with the Nagpa. Honestly, great villain. Great villain.
Yeah. Well, the group of them.
Yes.
I think they're challenging 17, if I remember.
Yes.
They're spellcasters, so one by itself, a little iffy. But like, there's 13 of them.
They have feeble mind. Lord.
Oh, yeah.
So, like.
Yeah. No, it's a scary fight, but I'm saying, like, if you're a party of, like, level 15s, and it's like, there's one spellcaster, we're in a box, it's like, all right, they're just gonna fuck it up. But
right.
No, there's 13 of them, but by lore,
Anyways, for sure.
So then the Nagpa episode again.
they're actually all Nagpa episodes.
Yeah, ever since Thanksgiving 2018, it's all just been Nagpas. It's
this episode brought to you by the Nagpa.
Yep, continuations of the Nagpa episode.
All right,
but I got nothing else on
trolls. No, I don't either. I mean, they're interesting, but I
like the stuff Mordekaine has added. It's almost like it's kind of like a Volos treatment to them, which you don't normally see in Mordekaine's, which is more focused on here's the big things. But
it didn't need a chapter exploring the lore of trolls.
No, this is
a perfect.
Yeah. Nope, I'm happy with it.
All right. So let's move on then into a Ask Monsters in Multiclass segment. So this one, I feel like we just tackle almost every episode, but let's see what comes out of it. So this is from Penguin Knight, spelled with a bunch of numbers. So X Penguin Knight X, you know how usernames are.
Yeah.
What do you guys feel makes for a great encounter? for both grand set piece battles as well as smaller skirmishes?
The big question.
I know, right?
All
right.
That's so.
And let's, I think we should even focus on like smaller skirmishes or grand ones first.
Okay.
I think that both those two categories benefit from polar opposite things. I think your short encounters, the best thing they can do is not actually drag. That is first yes. and foremost, if it's not boring and doesn't take 3 hours, it's perfect. Yes. You know, you really, you don't have to add much. Whereas the awesome set piece and counters, that should almost be a session of combat. So that's, and that's the hardest thing to do, is finding how to keep combat moving, but not make it impossible or obliterate everyone. Just keep things working like that.
Right. Just having that level of tension maintained throughout 8 rounds, you know, that's kind of tough to really get. Most combats realistically are going to last 2 or 3 rounds, you know, maybe 4 in a bit of outliers. But for the epic ones, if it's over in 2 or 3, you're like, oh, that wasn't that crazy, was it?
Right.
We're fine. I think you're totally right, though. And we've seen encounters that have dragged on too long. I mentioned in an episode probably a couple months ago, there was the earth elemental one I threw at you guys, which was just like, oh, there's some earth elementals. It was a random encounter. And near the end of it, I was like, damn, this has gone on way too long. I feel like nobody's really interested anymore. And we talked about it afterwards, and that was basically the consensus, is like, they were really boring enemies and we just kept fighting them.
Right.
So where I thought like, oh, this needs to be difficult, really, it could have just been quick and everyone would have been happy.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Not every short encounter has to be crazy and unique and everything. Sometimes it's fun to just have a really straightforward fight, roll some dice, obliterate the shit out of things. But yeah, you know, the characters get a little bruised up a bit, maybe use a resource here or there, which will then make, you know, compound into later fights.
Right. That's the most important thing about the small encounters, in my opinion. So, yes, keep them short, but also make sure that they're still taxing.
Yes.
You know, they have to be short and taxing, and that's it. They're bursts. They're the sprints make the players use one or two spells that, sure, the spirit weapon wasn't used for a full 10 rounds, but that's okay. The second level spell slot was burned, and it's not there later.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. But and occasionally mix things up as well, because if it's all that, then it does get dull.
Mm-hmm.
You need to occasionally have some fights where it's like a really unique mechanic.
Yeah.
Which trolls were, they're not unique. That's not unique anymore, but like the regeneration thing, or like an additional objective, like protect this person or whatever.
Right. And I would say that in that same vein that Will mentioned, those need to be polar opposites. For a final fight, I don't want my main objective to be like, ooh, protect this NPC. Like, I don't want to do that. I want to just like, this is my time to shine. I want to do big damage. I want to pull out all the stops. I don't want to have to work around this like one person or whatever. There are some ways to incorporate it. Like, you know, in combat more, I think with the Dracolich episode mentioned before, where there's cultists. You need to kill the cultists before you can really kill the big bad evil guy.
Right.
Fine. That's layering your big encounters.
Yes.
And I would actually go to say that I think for grand encounters, the best thing you can do is layer the fight. Because it's going to go on for so long, you need multiple stages. And every video game ever has done this, where there are stages to the boss fight. The first one is you figure out the mechanic. Once you get that down, you can just hammer it out, move on to the next one.
Right.
And it keeps it fresh and interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also bigger fights, bring the terrain into it.
Oh, yeah.
For it should be affected in some way, where there's different ways to get cover or different levels, or the room's just so big and it's flying or whatever, or there's some dynamic thing, lava's pouring in or the chamber's flooding. It's just an extra thing to contend with.
Right.
And then that could actually be used to moving on to other phases. If you don't want to do the thing where like, that wasn't even my final form, and he evolves into something else, the environment changes.
Yeah.
It makes it trickier or just different in another way.
Mm-hmm. Though I would say and this is more turning into the like how to run a boss fight type deal, where if you are going to do like multiple stages, either through terrain or through the boss itself, just set a hit point level to do that. Don't be like, oh, they've got 500 HP and at 250 I'm gonna do that. Just say 250 XP, whatever they get to after HP. That you know, once they get to zero there, then we do the shift. And I only say that because otherwise you'll get them to like 5 HP and the paladin's gonna smite for 150 damage, and then you're like, okay, this next stage is gonna go really quick, isn't it? So that's a small thing. I've just found that that really helps with the boss fights, is making sure that the hit point levels you set are there to set the length and the pace of that, that, I don't say round, but round in the grander sense, not the rule sense.
Right.
And that's a, I think there's a lot to be done with that, especially like, even remember our least favorite campaign of all time, The Tyranny of Dragons.
Right.
The first big encounter is with an adult blue dragon, and you're like level two or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you do 15 damage, it goes away or something like that. But like, that's a right. interesting way to structure a fun encounter that, you know, makes your players think, and it's definitely a change up from what they might be used to.
Right.
Yeah.
Trying to think of some like big epic encounters that went well. There was one where you all fought the Balrog, or whatever it's called in D&D. I don't remember which way it goes.
Right.
But you guys fought it on like the volcano island. That was with you two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And there was like lava pouring in the entire fight. I remember that like the dynamic battlefield made that feel like a very epic fight.
Yeah.
Because it was just constantly changing. I think there's probably still things that could have been changed around to make it feel even more epic, like changing terrain behind you to make it feel more of like a treadmill effect.
Right.
But then also even thinking to any big boss fight I've ever done where there's like, okay, you know, this area has like water and the BBEG can hide in the water, or they can go into a different form, or there's like banisters that they can go up into, or you all can go up into, and whatever, just really trying to make a dynamic battlefield
right.
That isn't just a flat square with maybe two or three pieces of cover.
Right. Couple trees here and there.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's great for a short encounter, for something yeah. you just want to quickly set up. But for a big fight, it needs to feel like a big location. So that's the real thing. Location, location, location.
Right. And then I say for smaller fights, versatility on it, as in don't just keep throwing the same enemy type.
Right.
Over and over. Switch it up. And sometimes it can almost start to feel a little silly of like you're just cycling through just a wide array of exotic creatures and monsters attacking your players. But it's more fun. It's more interesting. You get tired of fighting the same thing over mm-hmm. and over and over.
Yep. And I think the good example of that is in our Yuan-Ti campaign.
Yeah. Yuan-Ti.
Like, a lot of it did come down to just like, okay, you're fighting a different mix of these Yuan-Ti. I don't think there was more than a dozen of those fights, but it's still kind of a lot, even right. with a campaign centered around that. In retrospect, even just giving them different things. Like if I was like, oh, in this fight, there's a Yuan-Ti who has Sentinel. He just has that feat. It's like, well, why does he have a feat? I don't know. He's a general and he's really strong and he's just going to have that. Just something to like fully change it up. If you are going to, for any campaign specific reasons, have the same character or enemy over and over and over, you got to change them up. They can't right. just be the same stat block. Just throw little wrenches in there to make the players rethink how this fight's going to go.
Right.
One thing I will say about smaller encounters, and I think this is where a big part of the challenge is, I think there is a lot of potential making very fun, very balanced encounters by using a lot of pawns. And it's just up to the DM to find an efficient way to keep track of those and keep the battle moving, because it lets players kind of like tear through these guys. And, you know, you can also end the fight when you think, okay, I've done what I need to do. They all run away.
Fine. Right. No, and that's definitely something I've come around to, is even just having minions that take literally one hit. You don't track their HP. You just go, they die in one hit. If they hit, this is how much damage they do and the type of damage they do. Doesn't need to be crazy complicated. Not every single minion needs to have spell casting or needs to have resistance to this damage or whatever. It's just like, this is a thing that you have to deal with, or else they will gang up on you and you will die.
Right.
Yeah, that's I definitely did that before. It's like mentally tracking, this thing is going to die when you hit it, and this thing does this much damage. Don't take dice rolls from your players, but when it's you, I mean, it's no big deal.
Right.
Just roll it in your head. You know, oh, he does 4 damage. Nobody cares.
Right. Honestly, I ask you two as players, if you knew that I was like, okay, these minions do 6. That is their average damage. I'm not rolling for it every time. They do 6 damage. Does that take anything away? That knowing that I'm not rolling for it?
No.
No, I don't give a shit.
Not if it's, yeah, little minions and stuff.
Right. It's like, okay, yeah, the purpose of them is to do damage. They'll do damage. They're also not going to crit, most likely. Or right. maybe they do. I don't know. I don't know. That's to be decided. But most likely they're there to just annoy you.
Right.
And it lets the wizard feel like a fucking badass when they use their fireball and kill 10 of them.
Right.
You know? Like, who needs the save?
Nobody ever thinks about the wizards.
That's not
every
true.
DM is just sitting there like, how can I get out of as much fireball damage as possible while also hitting the entire party with my AoE?
There was, I still remember the fight in the Underdark where I think it was troglodytes were chasing after us, and our wizard cast Storm Sphere and she just destroyed them. Yep. And she was so damn happy. It was one of those things where I don't think you planned for that specifically, but the way it was handled was just absolutely ripping through this group. And I've been on that side as the DM where you're like, oh, I was hoping that would be a little bit harder, but on the other hand it's like, oh, that player's really happy,
right?
Like, I gave them the fight that they were like a badass in.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's definitely a balance. Like, you want to give each player time to shine,
for sure.
Do things to play to their strength and all that and make them feel like a cool badass. But if you only do that every single fight, it's like clearly set up, or although this one's made for Todd to shine and this one's made for Lisa to shine. It's like, it starts to feel a little patronizing after a while. It's like, all right, this is just getting tiresome. You're just spoon feeding us easy shit in like a circle here.
That's why you dunk on your players at every opportunity.
Exactly.
That's crazy. These goblins are immune to sneak attack and smite damage. Whoa, that's weird, right?
Oh man, I guess being a rogue paladin multiclass isn't going to work out too well for you, is it, Embers? Oh yeah, they also don't get booming bladed. Yeah. Weird, right?
Right. So, but no, absolutely, sign up encounters where it really challenges your players could be more interesting as well. Kind of like, if there's something that they rely on a lot, don't do it. Don't completely just nerf it, but for like one encounter, almost take that tool away and see how they handle it.
Right. That's
like, like with Embers, who was the rogue paladin multi-class. Absolutely, he's great at single damage. When there's a big thing, put Embers on him, do Vow of Enmity, because of course he's a Vengeance Paladin, with advantage, and just hit the hell out of that one thing. But if it's an encounter of like 15 smaller things, I don't really shine in that.
Yeah.
It's like more of a challenge for me. It's like, oh, I'm like really overkilling all this shit.
Right.
And it's like, if everything was like that, it would be frustrating. But if every encounter you threw at me is like one big thing, a meat sack for me to just melt the points off of, it would also be kind of frustrating after a while.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And, you know, even with the, man, we're really getting off topic to some extent, but, you know, with the fight just the other week where I gave an enemy Sentinel, because your big thing is running in and dealing damage and I'm going to disengage because fuck them. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit. Well, that's directly countering me.
Yep.
Great. Now it's changed. And,
it was fine.
For sure. Obviously, you lived, so it's fine.
The guy hit me really fucking hard.
Yes, he did. But somebody blinded him. Fuck you, Musty. Really good
Musty,
move.
Musty, time to shine.
Had big plans for that guy.
What were the plans? Being completely blind for like 7 rounds and then dying? Because then I've got good news.
Oh, no, they weren't. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. So I think that about sums it up. I don't know if we can give that in like a concise answer of like what to do for your small combats. Keep them short, keep them different, and make sure they're taxing resources. For your big fights, don't pull punches, have minions, and change up the terrain.
Yeah. Or just make it dynamic. Use the terrain, make it dynamic with phases.
Right.
Etc.
There you go. That's it.
Play some cool music.
Play some cool music, of course. My favorite is going on YouTube and search epic battle music and choose the one that says the word epic in it more than 3 times. That's the best music right there.
Yeah.
If you do have any questions, I think I said this earlier, but I'll say it again. If you have any questions, feel free to submit them to us wherever you can. I got one from a YouTube comment the other day, so literally, I don't care.
YouTube comments?
Yes.
Yeah, we're on YouTube, by the way, guys.
It doesn't matter. Subscribe to us where you get your podcast. Yeah. YouTube is like, people accidentally stumble upon us, and I guess that's cool.
Yeah, there's no video. Sorry. It's not, we have not like filmed us recording this, and you can look at our faces as we talk. It's just our logo static.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, send us questions through Twitter, Reddit, email, monstersandmulticlass@gmail.com. I'll find it. I really will. and maybe you can be featured. So thank you, Penguin Knight.
Right, and with that, thanks for listening.
Next time on Monsters and Multiclass.
Join us next week as we discuss The Explorer's Guide to Wildemount, the new book. We're going to be looking at the wizard subclass that's coming out with it, and a monster from it, and then doing a giveaway. So check that out.